Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under.
Me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters.
Filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
So let's get right into it with some recent news we've picked up, and that's the trade between the LA Rams and Detroit Lions. Matthew Stafford is going to the L.A. Rams, going to play in L.A., and Jared Goff on his way to cold Detroit with some great picks along in the package. Not only what does this mean for those teams, but what's it going to mean as the domino effect kicks in? And we know, we've already talked about this, a number of quarterbacks are going to find themselves in different homes at the beginning of the 2021 season.
Well, Cole, the big move has happened before the Super Bowl. This is taking over Super Bowl week. What a great way to end the season. The Rams, they basically shipped two first-rounders and a third-round pick to Detroit, as well as Jared Goff, to get Matthew Stafford back. So for me, immediately, that tells me that they're trying to get rid of this guy's salary, because the Rams have been in salary pain for a number of years. They haven't had a first-round pick since they drafted Goff in 2016, believe it or not, which is when they actually gave up another first-round pick to get Goff. So they spent four first-round picks effectively on this one quarterback. I guess that's the end of that chapter. But now they get a guy like Stafford who's proven as a quarterback. He just hasn't had the guys around him. Megatron, Calvin Johnson retired. He had Kenny Golladay, but things weren't happening in Detroit. He now goes to a team that was in the Super Bowl not too long ago and has a top defense led by Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey. Stafford can compete.
Great coaching with McVay.
Exactly. Detroit, as I said, they get multiple first-round picks and what some will say is a bridge quarterback in Jared Goff. The new coach, Campbell, he can rebuild with this team. They can get a quarterback with the first-round pick they have this year, maybe Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, or if they're not able to get who they want in this class, they can look at next year.
What I really like about this trade, actually, as far as it was orchestrated by Detroit, is that the first two-round picks they're getting don't include a first-rounder this year, which I actually kind of respect that. I respect that. Everyone was thinking, you know, someone's going to have to give up a first-rounder this year, and who knows how much more to land one of these quarterbacks on the market. But the fact that they're only getting a third-rounder this year, and then a first-rounder in 2022, and a first-rounder in 2023, that gives them the ability to really spend some additional time analyzing quarterbacks coming out of college and deciding what they really want. Because this particular draft, it's different in that what we saw from the players that are eligible in 2021 was a lot less than we'd normally see, right? Given the COVID situation, some of the players didn't even play last year. You've got a few quarterbacks that are getting a lot of hype, but they were in a restricted system with maybe not the same opposition they'd normally face. So what do we really know about some of these quarterbacks? Now, I'm going to say right now, Trevor Lawrence is a stud. He's been a stud from day one since high school. So you know what you're getting with Trevor Lawrence, but ranking some of the other quarterbacks in the draft could be difficult for some of these teams when it comes to the full analysis of it.
It will be difficult, Cole, because as you know, the combine is not going to be the combine that we're used to this year.
That's right.
It's been reduced to a virtual event where it'll be coaches interviewing players trying to get a feel from that. As far as I'm concerned, the NFL Combine was held this weekend when we had the Senior Bowl.
Correct. There was a few standouts in the Senior Bowl, right, which was a good thing. But again, that's very limited in comparison to previous years.
It's a limited pool of players. So we're going to see the smart front offices show how smart they are with this draft process, because some front offices and some GMs, they're going to be fumbling in the dark when it comes to their picks, because they're not going to have a chance to see the details on some of these players.
Yeah, this particular draft reminds me of specific players, only this time it applies to the entire draft. But quite often I've seen drafts where you have a question about where is this specific player going to go because the previous season they spent a lot of time injured. Only the season before that they were outstanding. So the draft is based more on what did they do 2 years ago versus what did they do this year. And I think a lot of that's going to take effect this particular draft, where they're going to look at what they do a couple of years ago. How did they perform then versus how they performed this season, or in some cases didn't perform at all. They were out the entire season. Their programs were canceled, basically. That's going to be a huge factor in looking at and evaluating what are these players really capable of. And I think having the additional first round pick in 2022 and the additional first round pick in 2023 really gives them some wiggle room and time. There's no urgency now to find the right guy to fit whatever system they decide to go with. And until you get there, you've got Jared Goff, who's already proven he can be a pretty good system quarterback. He's not an all-star, but he can run a system, and he's got those skills enough to get a good team to the Super Bowl. So they don't really lose anywhere along this deal, I think.
It really shakes up the division on both sides, more so in the NFC West. I mean, you're a Seattle fan. I'm a 49ers fan. So the Rams, they won a playoff game this year with John Wolford as their quarterback.
That's right.
So now they get Matthew Stafford. This really puts the heat on San Francisco because you got Kyler Murray, Arizona, Russell Wilson, who's a stud in Seattle. Stafford's now coming into L.A. Let's see what the 49ers
do. What do the 49ers do? Because I don't think Garoppolo's the answer. The book has been closed on Garoppolo. He's going to end up somewhere. I just don't know where.
Well, the 49ers, if I'm not mistaken, they have $2.5 or $2.2 million cost if they cut Jimmy Garoppolo.
That's the cap hit, basically.
Right. So they can move on from him for not a lot. And then it would, for me, it would be logical for Jimmy G to go back to New England, go back to the offense that he knows. Bill Belichick gets the guy that he wanted to replace Tom Brady initially. He knows McDaniel's offense. That makes sense. As for the Niners, with what I just said before, the other three quarterbacks in the division, they have to get Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson has a no-trade clause in his contract. So even if Houston says, we want to send you to the Jets, we want to send you to Carolina, he can just say, that's nice, I'm not going. Deshaun Watson should be campaigning to go to San Francisco. This is the best chance for him to win when he goes to Kyle Shanahan's offense.
It's Deshaun Watson or bust in your mind.
With the division the way it is, if the Niners stick with Jimmy G, that is not acceptable. If the Niners trade for Kirk Cousins, I still wouldn't be happy with that. The only consolation prize that
Do you like Cousins over Garoppolo?
Only because he knows the Shanahan system from their time in Washington. But the only consolation prize as a fan that I would accept is a trade for Matt Ryan. And I don't even know if that happens. For, if you want to set yourself up for the future, give up 3 first-round picks or whatever it takes.
A big cost. That's going to be a hefty cost, yeah.
But how often does a 25-year-old top 10, top 5 quarterback potentially in the league become available?
It doesn't happen.
It does not happen. So you pay whatever you need because that can be your franchise quarterback for 10 years if you get it right.
I'm going to throw out some names and tell me if you think it would be an improvement for the 49ers or someone they should just definitely pass on. First name I'm going to throw out is someone who wasn't given a chance last season, but I thought deserved one, just found himself in a system that already had favorites, and that's Jameis Winston.
Jameis Winston definitely deserves a chance in the league, definitely should get a chance in the league, just not in San Francisco. I feel like the way he bombs it deep, his style of game, he is well suited to New Orleans.
Okay.
He belongs in New Orleans. If not New Orleans, then maybe somewhere like Carolina potentially, but New Orleans is the sensible place. He's already in the offense. We've seen Taysom Hill.
They like Taysom Hill a lot. I personally don't, but they do, right? That's Peyton's guy.
This team, if they want to run it back the way they're talking about and get back to the playoffs again, they need to give Jameis Winston a chance. Yes, he had 30 interceptions previous year, but he also had 30 touchdowns. The guy can play. He's had his laser eye surgery. I think he's good to go.
Okay, next name.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Darnold, someone who wasn't given a chance in an offense that was pitiful, surrounded by poor choices and pickups or draft picks that didn't perform. What about Sam Darnold?
I would prefer Jimmy G over Sam Darnold, but I feel like Sam Darnold definitely get another chance. He's a guy that could keep going in New York. I feel like he has what it takes. If not New York, then somewhere like, again, Carolina, Dallas, if for some reason the Dak re-signing doesn't work out, Darnold definitely should get another shot in the league.
Okay, so you brought up my next name. You were talking about how often you get a chance to land a young top 5, maybe top 10 quarterback in the league. It just doesn't happen. Well, there's another opportunity with Dak Prescott.
Here's the thing. Dak Prescott is the only quarterback from the 2016 class that has not been cut, traded, or moved from the team that drafted him. He had a horrific injury. We all know that in 2020. But before that injury, he was on an MVP pace. He was on pace of 4,500 yards.
No, he was a top 3 quarterback statistically at that time.
He was killing it. So for me, I'd definitely take him over Jimmy G. If he was available for whatever reason, I doubt Jerry Jones would want to trade with the Niners, but if he was available, you take him. But the sensible move for Dallas would be to re-sign him, do whatever you need to do to make it work. If you need to tag him again, fine. Try and get him long-term. And just realize that with Mike McCarthy's offense, Remember, Mike McCarthy had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. So he knows how to get the best out of his quarterbacks. He'll get the best out of Dak. We saw that early on in the season. Dallas just needs to do the right thing by their fans and bring back Dak.
Now, you and I had a conversation a little over a year ago, I'd say, about what could happen with the 49ers and the possibilities of who they may bring in once they're done with Jimmy Garoppolo. And you just mentioned it. You thought that they would make a move for Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers, who was not happy with the way the Packers made moves this season, whether it be during the draft, free agency, not really getting him help at wide receiver, and then right up until the championship game, the last offensive drive where they opted to kick the field goal rather than trust him to put the team on his back and get the victory. He's 38. He's from California. He grew up as a 49ers fan. That would be, what a move that would be, because he wanted to play for the Niners. The Niners passed on him, famously, infamously, because whenever he played against the Niners in those first few years, he had a chip on his shoulder.
That's right.
So why not get the guy back? Why not trade for him? Send Jimmy G to Wisconsin if you have to.
You know the cost would be significantly less than going after Watson.
No doubt. But you get a guy who is potentially the next MVP, the MVP for this season. You get a guy who wants to play for that team, who will go even harder to beat the Packers next season. The Packers, they have a team that can get back to the championship game for sure.
That's right.
So that still makes sense to me. Aaron Rodgers to the Bay, get 2 or 3 years out of him, and then you reload.
Okay, and then you said you would be willing to give up, say, 3 first-round picks to land Watson.
3 first-rounders plus Jimmy G, maybe another player like Jimmy Ward in the secondary or Travis Benjamin as wide receiver.
Right, that's a huge cost. You're significantly leveraging what could be your future to get one player that you're saying is your future.
At the same time, like I said, how often does a 25-year-old quarterback who's proven that he is a top-level quarterback, they don't come on the market often.
So what about the option of spending half of that and just moving up in this year's draft to grab someone like, I don't think you're getting Trevor Lawrence, but maybe Justin Fields or, say, Zach Wilson?
I'd rather not. Here's the thing. And I apply this logic to my fantasy team, my dynasty team. I will spend the capital on a guy who's already in the league, who has experience, because I know what I'm getting.
So you'd rather a proven commodity versus a gamble in most situations?
Right, because there's risk involved. Whether we like it or not, I know we're getting into the draft season and there's going to be a lot of hype around these kids.
Huge hype.
It's great.
It happens every season.
Right. But how many flame out? Because remember, a lot of them go from college system where the rules are different and the offenses are different for many teams. Some teams have switched to a pro-style offense, but a lot of them are college offenses. Some of these guys are system quarterbacks. And this is the debate that people are going to have about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That he's a system running back and LSU propped him up with the way that Coach O utilized him. And we may not see that translate to the NFL for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but that's a tangent for another day. I would rather spend my draft capital on a guy like Watson, who doesn't come around often,
okay,
than take a risk on someone who may not work out and then have to go through the process again and again to find my guy.
Which some teams have found themselves in over and over and over again, like my Denver Broncos, mm-hmm, for instance.
Like the Cleveland Browns before they got Mayfield.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, no, it's just interesting. I wanted to see what you were thinking, because I know San Francisco finds himself in a very difficult position, right? They are in the toughest division in football.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think that's debatable. That is by far the toughest division.
It's the toughest division.
Right. To make the playoffs in that division requires a solid team with a star quarterback. Like, you need a star quarterback to make the playoffs if you're going to be in that division right now.
Yep.
And Garoppolo's not it.
Nope.
Right.
Speaking of toughness, even just thinking about the Goff side of things. So Goff goes to Detroit. He's going to be under pressure. He's going to have Khalil Mack. He's going to have Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter running at him.
He's going to play against Donald for the first time?
Right. Hopefully Detroit get him some help in the offensive line. Otherwise, he could be on his back a lot.
That's right. Face some of the same problems that Stafford faced while he was there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are going to look at it, wow, this could be huge for Stafford, and especially on the fantasy side of things. Because anyone who's played fantasy over the last decade knows that a safe backup quarterback to draft late is Matt Stafford, because he's going to have numbers. But a lot of that was due to playing from behind all the time. I don't think Stafford's throwing 5,000 passes.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's going to be significantly less.
Mm.
In LA, and there were seasons where he threw 600 passes, 600 attempts,
uh-huh,
in Detroit. That's not going to happen in LA.
Right.
So now it's going to be, can Stafford produce the way he did in Detroit with less opportunities, just maybe the more quality opportunities.
That's the thing. I mean, as you said, Detroit were often playing from behind.
That's right.
And Stafford, I had one of my fantasy teams last year in my home league, and then he got injured. So who do I get? I get Stafford. He helped me to get to rise up the ranks. The LA players, they get a bump with Stafford going to the Rams.
Yes, they do.
Cooper Kupp.
Robert Woods.
Robert Woods. Cam Akers.
Yep.
Because defenses will have to respect the pass even more now.
That's right.
So that'll open up opportunities for Akers to run. I like Cam Akers even more now for this coming season.
Yeah, because defenses would stack against him, and they wouldn't even really worry about the deep ball. Mm. So even the second tier of defense, right, when you get to the second level of defense, was tighter.
Right.
In most situations, whereas now they got to respect the deep ball, right?
Right, because Matthew Stafford has proven that he can play.
Yeah, you got a cannon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something we should get into next is how much LA gave up in this situation. And there are a few reasons for that as to why they did it that way.
Mm.
But it does set a precedent now, very early into the what will be the offseason, as to what are quarterbacks actually worth. Because they gave up a lot. Part of that was to unload the heavy contract they had with Goff. They gave him in 2019, gave him a huge contract, over $100 million at that time, right? So a lot of that was, we need to unload it to make it pretty. We're going to throw in all these picks as well. And that's why it happened. But regardless of why it happened, the league, I mean, they never seem to look at it that way. And agents don't look at it that way. Agents ignore the the extraneous factors.
Right, right.
Agents look at it like, if that's what Stafford's worth, what's my guy worth then? Right? So we were talking previously about how we'll expect to see a quarterback carousel this season. Now the values have been inflated once again. And this is going into a season where the salary cap is coming down. How does that restrict certain teams from making a move, say, for a quality signal caller?
Yeah, look, I mean, some teams will be really hamstrung by that. And that's why Pittsburgh have reached out to Big Ben Roethlisberger and said, hey, you need to help us to restructure your contract because the salary cap's coming down.
We won't be competitive
unless
you do it.
You got a $41 million hit, so you can either hold on to that money and retire in mediocrity or help us to try and run it back one more time. Now, Houston, for example, with Watson, they're, I think, $17 million at least underwater.
Yeah.
So J.J. Watt, as far as I'm concerned, he's done. He's not coming back. When they announced Cully as their coach, that told me that this team is going to rebuild and Watson's gone. J.J. Watt is gone. I can see J.J. Watt linking up with his brother T.J. in Pittsburgh. That Big Ben restructure, that won't make sense because Bud Dupree's not coming back as well.
Yeah, and that helps make it happen.
Mm-hmm. So just come back to the quarterback side of things. Yeah, the teams that don't have a lot of cap space or don't have a lot of draft capital, they're going to be struggling. They're going to be scuffling and probably hoping that a free agent, maybe someone like Cam Newton, becomes available. Whereas the teams like Indianapolis, New York Jets, they have that freedom. They can say, okay, we really want this guy. We're going to push hard and try and get who we want.
That's right.
So they're going to push hard to get Watson, convince him to come across. They can get someone like Carson Wentz, maybe. Indianapolis could definitely look at Carson Wentz. Yeah, it'll be the teams that have that wealth of options that'll get the guys that they want.
It also increases the likelihood of a number of quarterbacks going early in this year's draft in order to get that budget option right away, right? So expect some of the quarterbacks that maybe really don't have first-round grades to go in the first round as teams desperately reach for a signal caller at a discount.
That's a very good point you raised, Cole, because Trevor Lawrence, as we know, will go
first. Be number one.
Then after that, it's guys like Justin Fields, Mac Jones,
Zach Wilson,
Trey Lance, even Kyle Trask from Florida, guys who would have been a day two pick because of the way the market is, but now they're suddenly off the board. Even someone like Sam Ellinger from Texas, someone might want to take a chance on him.
That's right. Right. So that can really mix things up. And I mean, I don't know if we'll see that in the mock drafts. I mean, the mock drafts have already begun. But I imagine when it gets closer to the draft, you're going to see four quarterbacks being picked in the first 10 picks easily. And it's probably going to happen. We will put together a mock draft. We are. Nee and I are going to get together and really dive into it, and we were going to put together one mock draft. I don't do multiple. I think that's just bullshit.
Right.
But we will dive into it and come up with a mock draft that we'll release probably a week before the draft.
Are we going to do trades, Cope?
Of course. There's going to be trades. Okay. There's going to be trades.
All right. Very good. Before we continue, I should point out that we're actually on Apple Podcasts now, which is nice. Thanks to the good folk at Apple.
That's right.
So if you are listening, do us a favor. Jump on Apple Podcasts and find our show, Pro Sports Podcasters, and leave us a 5-star review. That really helps us out with what we're trying to do here, and it helps us to keep putting out great content and securing good guests. So we appreciate your help, and thank you for listening.
And we'll have some great guests coming up soon, previous to the Super Bowl episode, actually. Now, what we started with Pro Sports Podcasters is we're basically trying to educate casual fans to the point where they become dedicated fans.
Of their respective sport we're talking about?
Yeah. Or yeah, okay. Or we clue them into something they were unaware of, in this case, the NWHL. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I haven't even heard of that. I should check it out. And they go from not even knowing about it to being dedicated fans.
Amen to that.
Right? And that's essentially our goal, really. It's why we do the whole No Sport Is Left Behind. It's to allow the average person, give them a pathway, basically, to either discovering something they hadn't, no idea existed, or finding additional information and interest in something they already liked but didn't know half as much as they could. And that's because the information that's out there is so, like, sort of unidirectional. It just tells you one story, and that's the story that the league wants you to hear, but there's so much more to it than that.
Right.
So I want to hear about the NWHL, Justin. I know you've been spending the last couple of days really working on it. There's been a number of changes recently. And the Toronto Six are going to be in the playoffs, which is awesome, right? In their inaugural season. So what do you got for me?
All right. So let's talk about the recent big news which has happened in the NWHL is there's only 5 teams now.
Yeah, the Metropolitan Riveters are done.
Right. We're down to 5, which is Minnesota, Connecticut, Toronto, Boston, and Buffalo. Now, this has been released from the NWHL themselves, explaining the new format. So I'll just relay it to those people who may not have access to social media, or that has this information readily available. So, seeding was determined by win percentage from games that have been played. All right, so there's been 3 games played, so winning percentage, which I'll get to that in a minute as well. So that leaves Toronto at 3rd, Minnesota is 1st, and Connecticut is 2nd. Okay. Now that's important because seeds 1, 2, and 3 will play each other one more time to determine the final seeding. So it's a bit of a round robin. It's going to happen.
Does that take into effect their current points, or are they starting from scratch there?
I believe it's starting from scratch. So it's just the whole new round robin of those 3. They know that those 3 are going to be the top. They fight it out, see who becomes the new top kind of deal.
Okay.
So it's like a mini playoffs within the playoffs, if you will.
Yeah.
Seed 4 and 5, so in this case Boston and Buffalo, will play in a 3-game series to determine the 4th seed. Okay. Okay. So this is like mini tournaments to figure out who is going to be in the playoffs and how they become in the playoffs. And the last notion is the semifinals in the Isabel Cup will proceed as normal after the seeding has been determined. So once the mini tournament is over, then
it'll be your classic 1 versus 4, 2 versus 3 kind of thing.
Exactly. But this gives us more hockey now.
The two teams fighting for the last playoff position with the 3-game series, that's kind of cool. Like, that's a neat addition at this point.
I love that, because that makes the 4th seed valuable, as opposed to just there. Does that make sense?
Oh, no, I get it. Like, you really got to earn it. But I think on top of that, it also sets a precedent for maybe later on in this league's future as it grows. Mm-hmm. Right, instead of the, you know, single elimination type format, to incorporate more of these mini series to set a positioning, you know, as far as how you rank in the overall league.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That's cool.
I'm a huge fan of tournaments instead of tournaments. I think that's where you see the best teams shine, or at least the most consistent teams shine, and it makes for great, great games. And I am super stoked about this. So there's that. That's my first little intro to the NWHL and what's happening on that forefront.
Now, the current champion is Minnesota, right?
Correct.
And they have the best goalie in the league, correct?
Yes.
So that's their forte, sort of like their ace in the hole?
Yes, and their number one seed currently as well.
When do we play them?
I don't think the schedule has been fully released yet for that. I think that's coming later on this evening. We're facing the Whitecaps today.
So tonight's game is huge. That's a huge game for us. If we can establish a... whether we win or lose, but a competitive atmosphere against that team, we set ourselves up pretty well.
Yeah, if we win this, because this is the start of the mini round robin thing, then that puts us already in a good spot. Then all we have to do is kind of, well, ideally win. But if we beat the current champions, that means they're down by one, and that puts more pressure on them to dismantle the Connecticut team. And that'll allow us to kind of hold more dominance. I think we can do it, actually. Like, I genuinely believe Toronto has found their rhythm.
Well, it's nice that we're peaking right now, right? We started off a bit slow, but it seems like they've corrected a couple of things, especially the weaknesses on in the defensive zone that I had noticed the first couple of games.
Oh, you mean not knowing how to, like, clear the puck and stuff?
Yeah, not knowing how to actually bring the puck out of the defensive zone and suffering the forechecking. And they've gotten past that now. And offensively, they've been a dynamite team from the very beginning. So I think we have a good chance in our inaugural season to really potentially take it.
Well, I think, yeah, exactly. You're 100% right. I'm actually really confident we will make it to the finals.
Has the Minnesota Whitecaps, have they lost a game yet this season or no?
They're undefeated.
They're undefeated. Oh, man. So, all right. For those of you who are fans and those of you who are considering following the Toronto Six, the NWHL hockey team based here in Canada, the first one, definitely tune in tonight. The game's at 7 o'clock on Twitch. Follow them on Twitch and give the Toronto Six a boost to try and win this for us in their first season. And honestly, you won't be disappointed. The hockey is fantastic. Mm,
the hockey is stellar. I can't stop watching it. I'm the type of guy, I follow NWHL on all social medias. I watch their highlight reels. It's really fun to kind of go in and also dig a little bit of a rabbit hole and kind of see where you can go with information. You'd find how interesting it is to see the development of the NWHL and teams that have come and gone and teams that are still here and teams that are growing.
Pro Sports Podcasters is currently accepting applications for sponsors. We would love to have you on our program as one of its sponsors, and we will definitely do our best to highlight your product or service on our platforms. Getting back to it, I was watching Golf Channel.
Okay.
And something they brought up that a number of people have talked about recently in the golf community, and I've sort of mentioned it a couple of times on my Cove Life YouTube channel, but that's Tony Finau and his inability to seal the deal, basically to perennially come in second or find himself at the top of the leaderboard on the final day, but when the tournament's all said and done, he's not the one hoisting the trophy.
Right.
So they brought this up and they're trying to examine, you know, why is it that he's having such a difficult time winning where he's in contention so often? Actually, right now, as we're recording this, he is one shot back in the beginning of the third round at the Farmers Insurance Open. So he's one shot out of first currently.
Good.
I mean, that's the case so often and he doesn't win. And the first thing I want to say is, it's sort of a strange query because right off the bat, I got to explain to people, whether you're a casual fan or a dedicated fan, you need to know that winning a PGA golf tournament is seriously hard.
Yes.
That is no picnic. You're talking about a field that usually begins with around 150 players that are the best in the world. And he's won once before on the PGA Tour. And that is one more time than a lot of people who have played on it. So it's not a matter of, you know, why is it that he's having such a difficult time winning? It's just difficult to win on the PGA Tour. It's just a very difficult thing to do. And something about Tony's game is that he hits it long. He hits it consistently. He's got great touch around the greens, but sometimes his putting is a bit suspect. And if you're not putting well, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to win.
Right.
So that factors in. But more importantly, he's got a game that's similar to some of the very top players on tour, only they're just a little bit better or a little more veteran of a player when it comes to these big tournaments.
Now, what does being a veteran have to do so much with the golf courses? Now, there's multiple different golf courses. So does that help you understand and know more? Does it help you with...
Yes.
Like, okay, explain. Explain to the average fan why having more presence on various golf courses would be beneficial.
Okay, so you'll get these young phenoms that come out of college or who've qualified through, say, one of the smaller tours like the Corn Ferry Tour or the Mackenzie Tour. And they look fantastic. They have all the tools. They got all the skills. They have no weaknesses in their game. Then they get to the PGA Tour, and they have a difficult time manufacturing a win. And primarily it's because the majority of the courses they're playing on, they may never have played on before. Mm-hmm. And the more times you play a course, the better you get at it. It's not like other sports where you're playing on a relatively similar pitch or field every single time you play, regardless of where you play. Every course is completely unique. It plays different. It has little, you know, specific qualities that you have to learn to adapt to before you can really score well there. And even if you are a great player, if you are unfamiliar with a course, it can just ruin you. It can humble you. The more times you've played on particular courses, the better you can achieve at it. And that's something that the veterans have, that Finau, although he has been playing for a while now, doesn't have it to the same degree, say, in some of the bigger events. Mm-hmm. So that plays a factor. And what I wanted to get to was, you've got Tony Finau, and he's got a number of second place finishes on his resume. But at the same time, you've got another player who was primarily a European Tour player who we now see on the PGA Tour regularly, and that's Tommy Fleetwood, another TF, who's in the same boat, exact same boat. We're talking about a player who's a high-profile player. Both Tony Finau and Tommy Fleetwood are high-profile players. They're very well-known in the golfing community, and the majority of even casual golfing fans would know who they are. But they constantly find themselves in second place or somewhere near the top of the leaderboard without hoisting a trophy. Mm-hmm. And Fleetwood has been described by many as having the sweetest, you know, like second shot in golf. Like his ability to hit long approaches on monster par fives and such is just amazing. And overall, his game looks solid. But he has that issue, just like Finau does, of finishing out a round and hoisting the trophy at the end. And it comes back to the same thing. In Fleetwood's case, it's because he started off as a Euro Tour player and he had success on the Euro Tour and he still plays it to a great degree. He has not played that many PGA events over and over and over again, even though he's been around for quite some time. So he has that familiarity issue with certain courses that Finau has, where some other player may have a slight advantage because of being there X number of times before. And people always talk about it when they're talking about the very best players in the world, or someone like Tiger. Tiger has all these iconic shots and putts that he's made throughout his history, that when he goes back to a specific course, you know, even though Tiger is getting on in years and he's gone through all the back surgeries and such, you can't count him out here because he's won this event 7 times. And he's made putts from every position on every green to every hole position. And that's something else that the casual fan wouldn't understand, is that each green is designed with only X number of available spots where you can put the actual pin, mm-hmm. right? And each day they move the pin to a different position, but there's only so many of those locations where it can be actually placed. And on some of the more traditional courses, the famous events, they'll have 4 specific pin positions. And over the 4 days, they use each one of those. Mm-hmm. So if you've played there before, you'll know that on Friday, they use a back right pin position that's tucked in behind a bunker, a front right bunker. And if you've played there numerous times, you might know, if I hit a ball flying from left to right to the left side of the green, it catches a slope which will draw it toward that pin position.
Right.
But if you don't know that, you might look at it thinking, well, if I hit a really booming drive, then I can attack that pin over the bunker, provided I'm close enough to use a wedge, mm-hmm. and just try and drop it in there with a lot of spin. And that might be a far more difficult shot than, say, the longer shot, which curls from left to right, but you're aiming at the left side of the green where there's no danger. So those things play a factor when you're playing so many rounds of golf over the course of a year, that those little advantages can be the difference between you winning or losing when it comes right down to it. But before we get out of this little segment, I want to make one prediction. I was talking about how Tony Finau and Tommy Fleetwood mm-hmm. never hoist a trophy.
Yes.
Which isn't entirely true. They've won on their, you know, respective tours and such, but it's been a while since either one of them has won, and they found themselves in second place or close to the top numerous times since then. Mm-hmm. As of right now, Tommy Fleetwood is 8 shots back at the Dubai Desert Classic on the Euro Tour.
Okay.
And Tony Finau was one shot back at the Farmers Insurance Open. And I'm going to pick Tommy Fleetwood to be the one who wins the next tournament.
You heard it here first.
Whether it be on the Euro or the PGA or even the WGC, I'm saying Tommy Fleetwood will be the one to win next over Tony Finau. I'm betting Fleetwood, even though Finau's one shot out on Saturday.
He's got that comeback, bro. He's got that comeback.
At the Farmers Insurance Open. I'm going to take a risk here because he could very well win this tournament, but I don't think he's going to finish it out. I'm going to go with Fleetwood be the next one to win. Possibly this season.